Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Aftermath Show. This is Blog Talk Radio's only post-apocalyptic show dedicated to the genre. My name is Will Coy, and welcome you to the show today. We're going to highlight the last episode of The Colony called The Exodus that showed last Tuesday, and kind of reflect back on the series as a whole. Some upcoming movies, again, we'll go over as I do every week, and obviously the first movie coming up in the post-apocalyptic genre is Zombieland, Woody Harrelson, which comes out on October 2nd, which is actually this coming Friday, so that'll be very interesting to look forward to here. Also, some other news on some online games that are online, Fallen Earth, and mainly, like I said, just want to go over mostly the series The Colony that premiered on Discovery Channel. We're going to start off with The Colony first. If you wanted to call in, you had a question, or if you just wanted to comment about something about the genre, you're welcome to. The number is 646-716-7562, and just call in and just bear with me a moment, and I'll get you on the show. Last Tuesday, the finale of The Colony, the episode called The Exodus, showed, and it started off with Mike at the. It started off with Mike basically had an accident on the trike, and that's the. Three-wheeler electric vehicle that the colonists put together, and Mike was in the warehouse basically testing it out, basically ran right into a table and some pallets, and he split his head open, literally, and it showed that on the show he had a pretty big gash on his forehead and it bled, and it had a nice pool of blood there, but he seemed to pull it together, and they kind of bandaged him up some, and he continued to stay in the show. He didn't exit out, because of it. So, Mike's a pretty tough fellow there, but it was good that he wasn't hurt, or hurt even more seriously than he was. So. And after, this is 9 weeks now that they've been, basically locked up in this, what they call a sanctuary, this area, this warehouse. And they've lost a pretty good amount, a lot of weight, and food is pretty scarce as far as what they've been eating. And the food's been rationed. So, with an accident like that, it would, it's almost like even tenfold, double what it normally would if you were, healthy, eating right and not under some of the stress that they had been put through for the last 9 weeks. And chronology of the episode. Let me just like I said, Mike had the accident on the trike. And they bandage him up, and basically he's all right. And soon after, it kind of goes to the next day, actually, and they receive a message again from the outside. And if you remember, they've been receiving a couple of messages here the last couple of weeks, kind of basically, they've had electricity pop on and off. They had water come on for a moment, and they got a couple of, transmission broadcast out that said that they were following instructions or so, maybe coming. And in this episode, they get a message basically saying that they had actually, because you have to remember John C., the engineer, had been sending out using that spark gap receiver. He'd been basically almost telegraphing out, they're in trouble and et cetera. And they acknowledgement from these another colony saying that basically there were hundreds of survivors. They had food and water. They had energy and supplies. And they were located south of where the current colonists are at in Los Angeles. And so they're a little bit excited, and they see this as, because at this point, they know that there's survivability there at the sanctuary and with the food and the water, the situation where it is, and pretty much there is no more food around, or at least that's the indication they get. They tried to go scavenge out. Remember the trailer a couple episodes before? They didn't really come up with anything. And I guess when they went out on that foray, that scavenging trip with Mike and Vlad, I guess they were kind of almost saying that, there wasn't any other food. There wasn't anything else to scrounge up anymore. Obviously, they're under a lot of stress also from what the marauders out there who are trying to get into the warehouse and take the sanctuary from these guys and from the colonists. So they receive this message, and they get kind of a bit upbeat about it, a little bit of relief, I guess, hope that there's another large colony with more supplies and a little more organization. So at this point, their plans totally turn. And, they've been working on that truck, getting armoring up, kind of making it more defensive, putting weapons on it, maybe a trap door and other things to use the truck to drive wherever they could find a new place to set up, to settle. And they get some coordinates, some longitude and latitude coordinates from the message, and it indicates that this group, this large group, is about 120 miles south of their location, south of L.A., so somewhere south going towards San Diego. And so the work continues to go on the truck, and, they really start putting that gas fire, modifying it, and they've got it all together, and they've got it mounted on the truck now. And the last part is them loading it up, putting supplies on the truck, and they get the truck, running. It's ready to go. And next scene, you see them loading it up again, and they've got it packed, they got it ready, and at that point, you see marauders showing up in a vehicle, smashing through one of the gates to the yard, and so they're kind of, really rushing, running around, trying to, they've got the truck ready, and now, just trying to get everything, that final moment, because I believe it's like 5 or 6 in the morning with the show on there. And so, and they also have to remember, they have another vehicle Mike put together, the group had put together. I think it was the Rodero. It's a vehicle. I'm probably not calling it right, but oh my gosh, almost like an El Camino. Well, no, I won't say that. But it's a Rodero is what it's called, Rodero vehicle, and they've kind of fitted it out, kind of made it into a convertible, and got it outfitted to travel in, and got it running. So they have that, and they have the truck that they've also been working on these last several weeks, and the marauders, they smash through the gate through the yard, and then they get to the actual warehouse where the colonists try to fend them off. Oh, yeah. Before that, they had been also getting ready for the Marauders. They knew because, you know, from the last episode, Andre showed up and said he was going to bring his buddies back, and they were going to take the sanctuary from the colonists. So they had been getting ready, and there was one cool scene where Amy, the marine biologist, was, you know, testing some Molotov cocktails, some fire bombs, you know, bottles loaded with flammable, you know, liquid, and you know, she's throwing those off the roof, which is, was kind of cool, and she got some pretty good effect with those, pretty effective, I'd say, those Molotov cocktails that they made. So it's the Marauders busted through the yard there. They're set to get into the sanctuary. They're trying to fight them off with all the different weapons that they had kind of put together over these last several weeks. And at the same time, retreating back towards the vehicles. And that's what eventually they do. They get in the trucks, they get in the cars, and the scene you see next to them actually leaving the sanctuary and heading down the river canal or the canals there in L.A., heading south. Basically, this is where they were getting their water from through the series, through the whole experiment. And they start heading south, and really, I guess the biggest thing that happened then was Joey, who says, you know, he's from the L.A. area, chose to go back. So he takes the car. The Rodero, I know I'm not saying that right, but we'll just call it Rodero for now. And he asks to take the car and tells Mike and him that, you know, he would rather go back and try to rebuild what's left of L.A. because he says it's his city. So he had, you know, he felt pretty strongly feelings about it. And the group was feeling, you know, Joey was kind of always kind of a loner, some said. You know, I think Morgan kind of said something that was probably the most, I won't say interesting, but probably the most obvious point she made, or best point she made through this whole series was, you know, that you know, Joey might be a loner, but he really needs the group. And it was, if he wasn't, hadn't been with the group the last 8-9 weeks, maybe he may not have survived. Yeah, I'm just saying that she's probably, you know, she's probably right about that. You know, I'll kind of go back to that in just a moment, but just that, you know, basically at the very end, Joey, you know, heads back to L.A., and the rest of the group, you see them in a truck driving down the canal, heading south, heading towards, you know, this other large settlement or group, and hopefully, you know, a better place, you know, somewhere that's at least a lot safer, and obviously a place that we'll be able to find food and water. And then the scene just kind of lifts off the canal, and you see a CGI kind of background of L.A. in this type of post-apocalyptic scene, which is pretty typical of the post-apocalyptic genre, which is it really looked it was pretty cool. And it kind of really set the overall scene of L.A., I think, you know, and we've just kind of seen it tidbits when the show opened up sometimes every week. But, you know, the end, that it really is a post-apocalyptic total, you know, end of the world scenario because you can see the buildings in total disarray. Some of them looked a bit burnt out and smoke still lifting up in the sky. And so it kind of sets the scene that, you know, that L.A. is pretty, you know, it's not the old LA. It's pretty maybe deserted almost to the point of not even probably, you know, inhabitable, you know. Although that was my point there at the end when I was talking about Joey. But, you know, hey, there are a lot of marauders. There's a lot of other people. And we saw during the series groups of people walking through, you know. You know, I guess maybe, you know, I guess, you know, who knows? He may join up with another group or, and maybe they can make it work, somehow survive somewhere around in L.A. But you know, I just you know, this was a great little experiment. It was, you know, being a fan of the genre and watching a lot of the films and the shows and the books and such. It was pretty refreshing to see something a little different. And this was a bit different. You know, obviously. you know, there was a little bit of your acting involved, a little bit of, well, let's, you know, as far as the experiment itself, survivability was right on, and you know, these, you have to hand it to these volunteers actually, because they volunteered for this and they're not getting, they weren't getting, there's not a big payday or big, you know, money pot at the end of the rainbow at this show. There's no contest. These folks basically volunteered to get to do this, and they went 9 weeks. Pretty much each saw it. I mean, they were pretty grimy, dingy, even though they did try to use water to bathe and such, and you know, the food and water was pretty serious a lot of time, for most of the time, and you know, being cooped up kind of in that one area, at the same time having these marauders show up banging on the warehouse and such, and you know, it kind of hit the mark. You know, as far as I mean, they did a pretty good job. You know, I think the only thing sometimes is, you know, you have to know that even though they're you know, keeping the scenario alive in the minds, and as far as they try to portray in front of the cameras, you know, at the end that they do know that there is another, that, you know, this is kind of make believe, you know, that you know, they are going to make it back to their families, they're going to make it to their, you know, homes. So in that kind of sense, you know, they did a pretty good job. I guess where I'm, you know, my point is, you know, how real could they make it, you know? And I think they succeeded in that. You know, in the sense that when they put these people together for the 9 weeks, and that's really what you saw, the slice of what, if this was real, because obviously these, in the way scenario is set up, that, you know, millions, I mean, you know, just a large population of people died from some type of epidemic, viral epidemic, and there were only a small hand of survivors. And as this scenario was set up, it was a week or just days after, you know, everything had collapsed, that these group kind of, these people started finding each other and walking and then finding the sanctuary. And then the immediate situation, which would be, you know, trying to organize within some defensive place, maybe, and try to survive those first weeks, those first days, obviously. If you survive whatever the epidemic or whatever caused the cataclysm, if you survive that, then the main thing is just, you know, the basics, you know, just, like I said, food and water and shelter, the things that you, you know, have to, you know, sustain to be able to sustain life. Human life. And so they succeeded in the show showing that. And obviously this group, being as skilled as they were in different areas, were able to, you know, take advantage of a lot of the tools, the machines and the equipment, things that they found. They were able to modify certain things in order to, you know, to produce that one gas fire, to produce for the electricity they were able to have. You know, the water purification system they came up with the charcoal, the sand, you know, everything to make the water at least potable. And there were so many other different things, the solar panels and, you know, the trike to basically, you know, go outside of the sanctuary. You know, and there were several other inventions, things that they came up with. And it was pretty interesting to see, you know, using your mind, you know, using the tools that are left over. And that is really the essence of a lot of post-apocalyptic, you know, the genre, is the aspect of survivors, those days, weeks, months, years after, what they are able to, you know, pick up, what technologies they're able to still use, to modify, to sustain, you know, because we're not, you know, I know without, cause we don't have enough time here. Obviously, there's a lot of debate, you know, a lot of, you know, really neat discussions on if something like this would happen, how far back would human civilization or society fall back to? I mean, and I'm talking back to centuries. Would we fall back to just a pre-industrial age? You know, would we go back to as far as, you know, Iron Age, Paleo, you know, even further back to, you know, Paleolithic, you know, period, you know, maybe not that far back, but, you know, a lot of discussion, you know, what would we be able to sustain, and you know, what society would be able to keep from the past, and would they be able to build on that and get back to what once was, or would they, you know, would things just totally just fall apart? And you know, because there's a lot of variables in that. You know, you have the marauders we talk about. That's just a whole nother, because when society and civilization breaks down, when your laws and laws break, you know, are you know, there's no law enforcement, there's no one to enforce the laws, there's no one to, there's no central leadership, and you know, if you run into, you know, you become bands or clans or you know, city states or whatever, you know, you know, well, even if you're a city state, you probably, you know, then you start building, you know, some type of laws. But the initially, after any post public scenario, I think the worry is the breakdown of law and order, and how would people be able to not only survive, to get the necessities, the basics like food and water and shelter, but keep themselves safe from other people, you know, trying to steal or harm them in other ways. So, you know, there's a lot of, it's pretty interesting in the show that they did show a lot of that as far as the survival aspect, how they were able to do it. You know, scavenging, they did a lot of that. They did go out, although I was a little bit, I'm not the word hesitant, but I was a little bit, you know, about as far as them scrounging food, I would have thought maybe they would have done more of that. I know with Mike, he said that on a show with Sean Daly on his show a couple weeks ago, that food really wasn't a problem those first couple, you know, initially, and they had a lot of stocks. But you know, I would argue that that would have to be day to day, continuously, you know, thing you would want to do. I would say you have to keep looking, finding. And now it could be that the scenario was that they just didn't show that. Maybe there just wasn't any food. There wasn't any more to scrounge for. And that was it. And that could be the case. But, you know, they did a lot of scrounging. They did a lot of that, you know, like I said, and also coming up with the different inventions, survival things that they did, putting together as far as keeping some electricity, some semblance to the old, you know, communication device, the SCART, you know, the spark gap device, the communication device, the receiver. That was pretty neat, and they put together weapons, you know, obviously to defend themselves, although, you know, I said this before, you know, this is the United States, there are guns, there are lots of guns, and that's one thing I think in opposing, one thing they probably didn't, and I think they probably didn't because they didn't want to visibly show that the violence. I don't know, maybe there was some decision on that, but you know, yeah, it's plain fact that I think it's one out of three Americans households have guns in their homes. They're just, in a world like this, you can guarantee the leftovers, the people who do survive, are going to be, you know, at least men or someone, not, I'm just saying, they're going to be a group of people with guns protecting other people and people with guns using them for other reasons, you know, nefarious reasons. But anyhow, they put together a lot of different things to defend themselves: the flamethrower, the shock, electrical shock device that Johnny came up with, and there were some other devices. Also, they showed where they traded with that one group that came in. That was something that was, you know, you'd probably think you'd see some semblance of that going, because people have always bartered, people have always traveled and traded. That's just a basic human nature. I mean, thing about us as society people. We know how to barter, we know how to trade, and you know, and also they showed a lot of, like, the stragglers, the people, survivors that were just walking along, just trying, the helpless, the weak, the children, the handicapped, and they showed symbols of that. And they showed the struggles, which I thought was really, they needed to show, and they did kind of, you know, play that out, where, you know, they had to decide if they would give somebody water, if they had enough, they could do it. Most cases, the group decided to do it. There were some, like Mike and others, that, you know, just, no, we're not, we can't give any more of our supplies, because we may be endangering our own survival. And those are decisions that are just, you know, in a situation like this, you obviously would probably would be coming face with. And you know, they did play that out. I was trying to think of some other aspects of the show. You know, it was just really, you know, pretty well put together. I thought, you know, I thought maybe I would have hoped to see a little bit more interaction with the group, as far as they did show sometimes, like late in the evening, maybe it was the way they edited it, you know, the group kind of talking about this and that. I would like to see more discussion about their plans, you know, what they thought, if this is the scenario. And, you know, another thing I've learned is, and I believe this is what happened, that when they first did this, this was filmed back in March and April, and I think it was John C., the engineer, he was on a show, on a radio show, and on that, I think it was the way they told the colonists that this was some – they didn't really tell them what the cause of the post-apocalyptic or cataclysm was. I think it was kind of more generic. I believe that's right. And so they really didn't play it out as – I would if they do this again, I would think that they maybe, instead of make it more generic, what was the reason that way? It makes it more – you know, what gives it more background, let's put it that way. And also it focuses on more of, okay, this was a, you know, viral serious situation. You know, if that's the case, you would hear more of a medical, some talk about the virus itself. And I don't know, some of those little things that, you know, I would like to see them more discussed in the group, and that would play it out in, you know, even though it would be kind of, you know, acting it out, you know, it would have been kind of a little bit more, maybe more, a little bit more real. And it was still real, at least for these folks, because like I said, they were not there 9 weeks. Other than that, you know, there was, you know, a couple of really neat scenes in the series. Obviously, you know, you know, watching you know, the group defend themselves against the marauders, you know, and you know, kind of got tense there at times, and them going out, and you know, Joey, you know, trying to face off the bad guys outside, and you know, it was pretty cool. It was as well as they could have got it for. And this is the first time they've done anything like this. I think in the future, if they do it again, I would like to see them. You know, you don't have a certain time period, like 9 weeks. You know, I've thought about this, about, like, you know, you want to get deeper into, like, an agrarian society, you know, agriculture. You can't play this out for a year or two. You don't know whether or not crops are going to survive. You know, I don't think so. I mean, what's your survivability rate if this if you're able to get these things done? Like, you know, finding animals, domesticate, those kind of things. But I would like to see them maybe take this somewhere out, away from the city, a deserted maybe town, a small little town, maybe, you know, with a post office, a fire station, a school, just a couple of houses, you know, just if some desert, and then, you know, this was what would remain. This is where they're at. And just leave a few little tools and stuff like that. And then somewhere that's maybe 100 miles, 50 away from any other towns or communication and such, you know, and put them in a situation where it's more just desolate is what I'm trying to say, I guess, and then play it out. And, you know, I think that would be kind of really kind of interesting to see something outside of a city environment, you know. But all in all, you know, The Colony was really. I thought it was a great series, and I hope that we do see some more on it. And you know, it was a lot of fun watching it every Tuesday. And you can get the series if you haven't watched any of it. I think you probably still watch some of them at the Discovery Channel website. Obviously, they're selling the DVDs set, so you could buy the whole series on DVD. Real quickly, I wanted to just on my webpage, on the blog page there, at Blog Talk Radio, you'll find my little, I'm calling it my YouTube video of the week, and I'm I found a neat little gem I haven't seen in years. It came out in 1982. It's called Warlords of the 21st Century, or another name was called Battle Truck. It was filmed in New Zealand. It's very similar to Mad Max, you know, with the gas, you know, all of the world, you know, oil and the and civilization basically decaying. And it's called Warlords of the 21st Century. You can go to YouTube. There's 10 parts of it over there. I've got a direct link. If you don't want to do that, just go to YouTube. Just search for Warlords of the 21st Century. And each week I'll try to put something else. Because YouTube, I noticed people put up the, you know, obviously you got to sit there and you got to watch, you know, one 10-minute episode, then another and another, and it's broken up like that. But, you know, this is an easy, it's free. It's a glimpse of, you know, this is a pretty classic little example of post-apocalyptic in the 1980s, and we'll have to go into the 1980s some other time when we got more time. And obviously, I haven't even gone in. We're running out of time. Zombieland is going to be coming out again this coming Friday. The premise of the movie, it says here, after America is ravaged by a zombie plague, a lone band of survivors fight the living dead while they cross the nation. They stop at an amusement park where they believe they will be safe. Now, this was filmed on location, Georgia. It has Woody Harrelson in it, Jesse Eisenberg, Emma Stone, and Abigail Breslin. And Ruben Fleischer is the director. Now, there is a, I think it's called CanMag, it's a website. He did an interview, or at least they posted up over there. And Ruben Fleischer says, the whole time they did directed this in the road, they've made it very post-apocalyptic. The trucks, the cars, the stores, everything looks just like it would be a post-apocalyptic world. So this is definitely worth checking out, and I'm really looking forward to it. You know, since Shaun of the Dead, I love that movie. So, you know, this will be a lot of fun. I've got the YouTube video, the trailer on the website there. And also, real quickly, I have started a blog for the radio show. The website there is www.theaftermathshow.blogspot.com. It's www.theaftermathshow, one word, theaftermathshow.blogspot.com. I've only got the radio program up, you know, the widget for it, and I've got some of the same trailers on there. But I'm going to be adding a lot more content, some daily stuff. And so you can catch some of your, some of the post-apocalyptic news and some of the things that I'm following on that new blog site. Okay, and you can get a direct, there's a direct link on my Blog Talk Radio Show link to my new blog, The Aftermath Show, at Blogspot. And real quickly, I'm reading Earth Abides. I just picked it up today. It is 1949. Yes, it's an old book, but a classic, and I can't wait. It was written by George Stewart, and I know a lot of people have commented, talked about this book. I've been meaning to read it, and I got it today, and I'm going to start on it tonight. And this is basically tells the story of a fall of civilization from a deadly disease and its rebirth. So I really can't wait to get into that tonight, and I finish it up here this end of the week. And obviously I'll be wanting to talk about that, if not this next week, very soon. Now, the next show I'll probably plan on will be next Tuesday around this time. I haven't got it scheduled yet, but, you know, definitely look out. The next show probably obviously will be around about Zombieland and any more post-apocalyptic news that's out there, and there's lots. And obviously we've got with Zombieland, we've got 2012, November 13th, The Road, November 25th, BBC America's bringing out Survivors this fall, and next year, beginning January 15th, the Book of Eli's out, and you can see that new trailer, trailer number two, on my Blogspot or at on the website at Blog Talk Radio. I really do appreciate you listening. You know, just I wish I'd scheduled a little bit more time, but we'll go over a lot more material next week, and so just keep tuning in there to Fallout Shelter, and keep tuning in to the Aftermath Show. You have a good day.